none of those should factor in to whether or not Trevor Lawrence was the most outstanding football player in college football this year. The NFL draft, like Trevor Lawrence is the highest graded prospect since Andrew Luck. He is in the conversation as far as a college kid being pro ready with Andrew Luck and John Elway. That has no bearing on the Heisman Trophy. I find it hard to believe that anybody who watches college football this year can sit here and say he had the most outstanding year in college football. Was he more impressive in 2020 than DeVonta Smith, Kyle Trask, Mac Jones? I don't know how you can put him ahead of everybody. He missed multiple games. And look, it's not his fault. You know, you get COVID, you get COVID. I'm pretty sure Trevor Lawrence goes about his business the right way, but I can't sit here with a clean conscience and say, yeah, he was hands down the most entertaining, exciting, the most outstanding player in the sport. So here's how I think it's going to play out with the voters. So I'll give you the way I would vote. This is how I think it should go. DeVonta Smith 1, Mac Jones 2, Kyle Trask 3, Trevor Lawrence 4. And 2 weeks ago, I thought Kyle Trask was the front runner. He was the odds on betting favorite. This was a guy who was clearly on his way to win it. And then LSU happened. And he did not have a great first half, couple of turnovers, still ended up with a pretty good game, but Florida lost that game. And I don't hold a loss against you, but now you're looking at 3 losses. Kind of hard to go Kyle Trask, even though statistically he was the best quarterback in college football. I mean, he put up Danny Werfel numbers from 24, 25 years ago. I look at Smith and Mac Jones, and there's a part of me that says, yeah, common sense says we're going to see some votes taken away from each guy. And if Alabama doesn't have a Heisman Trophy winner this year, it's going to be because, you know, DeVonta Smith and Mac Jones took each other's votes. Najee Harris took away some votes. And I do think there is a Bama bias out there against Bama players winning the Heisman. Think about Alabama, the history of their program. They've got 2 Heisman Trophy winners, Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry. It's kind of odd. Here's how I think it will play out. I think it will be DeVonta Smith 1, Trevor Lawrence 2, Kyle Trask 3, Mac Jones 4. I don't think we'll ever see a Bama quarterback win the Heisman. I thought Tua, if healthy, had the best chance a few years ago, and that has come and gone. But the one thing that does bother me about the Heisman Trophy is, you know, there's a lot of guys that submit their vote early. And if you submit your vote early, especially in a year where we're talking about one of the closest Heisman Trophy races of all time, you should be stripped of your vote. If being a voter for this award is such a burden, or you are going to take it so lightly that you submit your vote Thanksgiving weekend or the first week of December on a year where we were going to play through the 20th of December, you should have your vote taken away. And I also think there's a lot of these guys that have these votes that have had it for a long time that are kind of tired of it. And they just, reminder, I got to have my votes in by 5 Eastern today. And they do it with 10 minutes to go. They submit it on their phone and they're done. But I am of the belief that there's no way Trevor Lawrence should win this award this year. Clearly the first overall pick. Clearly the best thing we've ever seen since John Elway and Andrew Luck. I get all of that. Yeah, he's only lost once in his career. Could he very well win the national title this year? Absolutely. Clemson's the only team that can beat Alabama. But if we're going to go by the true meaning and definition of the award, college football's most outstanding player, I don't know how we go against DeVonta Smith. Because Alabama lost Jaylen Waddle this year, who going into this year was the guy everybody was talking about, the most explosive player in college football. I mean, he has the Devin Hester return game with a ridiculous ability to play wide receiver, And Alabama lost him early on against Tennessee on the opening kickoff against the Vols. And Alabama's offense didn't miss a beat. Devontae Smith didn't miss a beat. We have all these preconceived notions on players, and it's like, well, unless he's just god-awful and there's no way I can vote for him, or if he has a season-ending injury, I'm going to vote for him. Yeah, you know, Justin Fields finished seventh. I know Ohio State only played six games this year, but when Ohio State and the Big Ten got rolling, Justin Fields came out of the gate like a madman. Like, his hair was on fire. What was he, 80 for 84 his first couple of games? I mean, he was completing like well over 80, 85, 90% of his passes. And now Justin Fields, undefeated Buckeyes, team is in the playoffs, and he finishes seventh because he struggled a little bit against Indiana, good team. Struggled a little bit against Northwestern, good team. Both really good defensively. Pat Fitzgerald and Tom Allen, fantastic coaches. And Justin Fields finishes seventh. I kind of feel like Justin Fields was a little bit slighted. Definitely should be ahead of Zach Wilson. Definitely should be ahead of Ian Book. Kyle Pitts finishes 10th. Now, if Kyle Pitts doesn't get injured and miss a handful of games this year, Kyle Pitts is probably top five. All right, so that's the spiel on the Heisman Trophy. A couple of things before we get to Joe Patrick coming up next segment to talk Braves and United. You know, it's interesting with these bowl games. It feels like now more than ever, people just don't get into the bowls the way they used to. And I'm not even sure people are overly ecstatic for the college football playoff because, yeah, we have Bama and Clemson, and we're tired of those guys. They're deserving. They deserve to be there. But there's a fatigue level. And then we have a debate with Notre Dame and Ohio State. Well, are they really the third and fourth best teams, or did the committee go with just the best brands? Okay, we can have that conversation. But it does feel like there are some lacking interest in the bowl games. But I got to tell you, I got seven or eight games that I'm very intrigued to watch. Miami, Oklahoma State, I think will be a very competitive game. Oregon and Iowa State, very competitive football game. Florida, Oklahoma, if you like points and you like offense, Spencer Rattler, Kyle Trask, they should light up the scoreboard in that one. The one that I'm really just dying to watch, I mean, I got to be a total loser or a college football junkie, but Liberty Coastal Carolina, the game that was supposed to happen over a month ago, obviously Liberty had the COVID outbreak. They had to cancel. Coastal said, you know what, we'll schedule somebody else. Who wants to come and play? College game day is coming to our site. And boom, here comes BYU. Coastal takes care of BYU. And now we get the game that we were supposed to get 5 weeks ago. Georgia-Cincinnati, I think, is going to be great. If you like really good football with defense and quality quarterback play, Georgia-Cincinnati is your ticket. Dogs defense and Bearcats defense, Desmond Ridder, JT Daniels, that should be fantastic. A&M North Carolina is going to be a really good one, as well as I think Ohio State-Clemson, at least on paper, should be a little bit closer and more competitive than Bama-Notre Dame. So I still think even in a down year where people are maybe not interested in the bowl games, college football playoff a little lacking because two of the four teams you can try to argue don't deserve to be there, I still think we have a good bowl season coming up with games that should be compelling and should be entertaining. All right, speaking of compelling and entertaining, our man Joe Patrick, Braves insider, Atlanta United reporter, he's going to join us on the other side. We will talk Five Stripes and Braves with him. Kind of the hot stove, it's a little, I don't know, a little turned off. I don't know that the stove is necessarily cranked up. Baseball, we might not see big movement with big names until February. We'll get into that and all things Atlanta United. Joe Patrick coming up next here on the Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in the Kale Show. Early edition today here on a Saturday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and theradio.com app as we take you up until 9 o'clock today. College football game time will come your way at that point, and they'll lead you right into Willie P. Coming up 1 hour from now, Dimitri Ravanos from Barrett Sports Media will join us. He had a really interesting column as a sports media critic on how college football is killing itself, yet ESPN is allowing it to happen. Very fascinating read. We'll get to that coming up in the final hour of the show. Also, Hawks and Grizzlies tonight, game two of a 72-game sprint in the association for the Hawks. We've seen them twice against Memphis in the preseason, and now we get to see it happen where it truly matters. Trae Young, Ja Morant, looking forward to that one as well. So we'll get to Joe Patrick, who joins us right now, and he joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline to talk United and Atlanta Braves. Joe Patrick, happy holidays. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, you too, Nick. Hope you had a great holiday with your family yesterday.
All right, so let's get into we'll start on the soccer front before we get to baseball. When I saw the hiring of Gabriel Heinze, my initial reaction, and I don't try to, you know, say that I'm a soccer aficionado by any stretch, but reading up on him, like, my instant takeaway was like, okay, wow, this feels like a move that should at least get the fan base excited to rejoin the elites in the MLS. Was that your initial reaction?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that even beyond getting the team back to where they expect to be toward the top of the table in MLS, I think that the most important thing, or the more fundamental thing, I think, in this case, is the fact that he's going to get them back to playing the style of soccer that Atlanta United fans were kind of indoctrinated in when this team first started under Tata Martino. And again, he's going to be a name, Tata Martino, that you hear a lot when you're talking about Gabriel Heinze, because he's a coach who kind of came up under that same kind of coaching tree as Tata Martino did, having both of them learn from their kind of predecessor in Marcelo Bielsa. You know, we talk about the cradle of coaches and coaching trees in other sports, particularly in football, with guys kind of learning philosophies and strategies from a certain lineage of coaches. And this is certainly one of those cases where Gabriel Heinze comes from a very rich kind of line of coaching. And so he's going to get Atlanta United back playing an exciting brand of soccer, where the team is going to be on the front foot and attacking and trying to keep the ball. It's going to be fun to watch for fans in that way, but I think by virtue of that, what's going to happen is Atlanta United's going to find themselves back competing for trophies and competing for MLS Cup and potentially even CONCACAF Champions League, which we didn't even know they were going to be in until a few weeks ago. So it's pretty amazing how quickly things can turn around in MLS, and in the case of Atlanta United, it's particularly fascinating just to see kind of the really, really down year they obviously had last year, but then you get a guy like Joseph Martinez coming back in 2021 on top of, you know, having this great coaching signing, and things are looking really great, honestly, for Atlanta United coming into next year.
So this brand and this style will be anything but than what Frank DeBoer was imploring?
Yeah, you know, the Frank DeBoer thing is interesting. I think Frank DeBoer came in and he wanted to really give the players creative freedom and things like that. But I think what ended up happening was that the players didn't really have enough specific instruction on what they needed to do on the field. And that's why you just saw a team that could keep the ball with their natural ability, but then things would just get stagnant and the ideas would run out because they weren't really well drilled enough on things they specifically needed to do. You know, it's funny, like in Tata Martino's first season, when Atlanta United was as exciting as any team we've maybe ever seen in MLS, it wasn't necessarily because he was just letting those guys, you know, just rolling the ball out there for those guys and letting them go out there and do it. That's honestly more of like what Frank DeBoer did. Tata Martino drilled those guys hard in practice every single day. I mean, I remember being out there at the training ground watching them do it. You know, it was not a fun experience, I think, for some of those players to be out there at times, but that's what makes a team great. When they're drilled and they know exactly what they have to do on the field, then they're not thinking about it when they go out there. And I think that that's the kind of thing you're going to see from Atlanta United in 2021.
You know, I was reading Dirty South Soccer last night in one of the columns on SB Nation, and, you know, one of the headlines was that Gabriel Hines' success won't be judged on trophies, but based on excitement. You kind of alluded to the exciting brand of soccer that they will play under him, but this is also a franchise that has MLS success. They have a cup in the bank, and I don't know how long excitement lasts if it doesn't result in championships, so do you subscribe to that theory?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think that, you know, first of all, there's going to be a big difference between 2021 this coming season and the following season. I think that really what people are going to be super excited for is just to see the style come back. I do think that they are I would predict they're kind of going to go hand in hand. Like, I think that, you know, when you bring the style back, you're going to bring back the success, and I think this team has the talent that is going to be successful enough to win some trophies, whether it's a U.S. Open Cup or an MLS Cup. I think that's going to be the natural progression for fans is after this next coming year in 2021, where they kind of pick themselves up off the bottom of the table and are able to get themselves again as being one of the contenders. I think the natural assumption going into the following season is going to be like, okay, we need to translate this into trophies now. And that's obviously what was the case with Tata Martino. If you look at 2017, his first year, you know, people were ecstatic just going to games and having fun time and watching the team be fun, score lots of goals, but they didn't win any trophies. And I think the fans were okay with that at the end of the season. Nobody was really disappointed that they didn't win MLS Cup, but then there was a different feeling going into 2018 where I think the fans were like, okay, let's translate this exciting style into some success. And I think there was a lot of pressure on Tata Martino and the team to be able to do that when they fell short of winning the regular season trophy of the Supporter Shield for the best team with the best record in MLS in 2018, when it looked like they were going to win it for most of the year. And that was a really disappointing moment for that team. But then, of course, they came back and kind of pulled out MLS Cup when people really didn't think they were going to be able to do so. And so I think that kind of, if you go back and kind of replay that story in your head, you'll kind of remember, oh yeah, we were really desperate for trophies at that time. So I think that, to your point, people are going to be feeling that way once again after this team kind of reestablish itself as one of the more fun teams to watch in MLS.
Joe Patrick is our United and Braves insider and reporter for Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He's joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. So let's transition a little bit to baseball here. So obviously We've seen a few pitching acquisitions by the Braves early on in the hot stove period, but things really have quieted down. It feels like a slow offseason start, not only for the Braves, but maybe just kind of league-wide. I'm wondering, like, are we going to get to the point where we're not going to see big names and big transactions and big movement until maybe February?
I think so. You know, I think that if you start to look at the way that free agency has gone down these last couple of years, even just in the chronology of it, you know, you don't really see these players signing until right toward the end. I think that players are feeling more comfortable not signing a deal in the off season until the very end. I think they're just getting more comfortable with not doing that. I think maybe if I want to be the cynic, maybe it gets them out of some spring training.
Yeah,
I know players are always talking about how, you know, this spring training is too long anyway. Maybe that cuts that down. But no, I think there are obviously lots of things in play this year. You've got the whole COVID situation hanging over, which is relative to the financials for these teams and how much they're going to be able to spend or want to spend. So I think that plays a big part of it. We know that, you know, the DH, this kind of mysterious DH rule, whether that's going to be in play or not, is obviously affecting a lot of teams. So there are some situations, I think, that are dictating this. And Alex Anthopoulos told us that, you know, to expect things to be slower after they sign these two players. I mean, I was, for one, very surprised that the Braves came out and made those two signings kind of boom, boom, right at the beginning of the offseason. But it sounds like, after having heard from Alex Anthopoulos speak about Drew Smyly and Charlie Morton, that those were players that they had targeted well before the offseason. Like, they had targeted those players. In Drew Smyly's case, they had been wanting to sign him the offseason prior, and they only were finally able to get a deal nailed down this offseason. So those were guys that they were really targeting and they were planning on signing, and they were able to lock those down, and now it's kind of, he warned us. He was like, all right, don't let these signings kind of color your perceptions of what this offseason is going to look like, because it's going to be a kind of a slow burn. And I think that, to your point, yeah, like we're going to see, I think, a flurry of deals happen right kind of toward the end of this offseason period.
You got to think, though, that Major League Baseball has got to come up with a decision here on this universal DH soon, because you know, whether that's the Braves or, you know, more importantly, you know, maybe teams in the American League, you know, some of these teams have got to figure out how they're going to operate and construct their roster. I mean, do you think this decision comes at least early January?
It's got to come soon. I mean, to your point, I really think it's been unfair the way that baseball has handled it so far. Like, I think that teams should have known now. They should have known yesterday, you know, like it's kind of been used as this bargaining chip. They've kind of been like using it as a chip in these CBA negotiations that aren't really kind of on the surface level at this point, at least in the media as they were like for when they were trying to get the season started last year. But you know, that's just really unfair to me to do that, because these teams have to build the rosters and they have to try to figure out how they're going to try to win a championship this year. And when you don't even know exactly what positions you need to fill out on your roster, it just seems crazy. And you know, I hope that they do allow the DH to come in the National League. I mean, I didn't ask about this, but I'm going to give my opinion on it anyway. I was one of the traditionalists going into last year about the DH. I like the pitcher hitting, the idea of that. You know, that's like pure baseball. But then you watch last year, and it was so fun, especially as a Braves fan, where you have one of the best offenses in the National League, and you don't have the rallies being stopped by a pitcher coming up. So, yeah, I mean, I hope they're able to come to an agreement on that soon. I hope that the agreement is to keep the DH in the NL.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left. Final one for you. I'm going to go rapid fire here. I'll give you a name. You tell me where you think he ends up playing baseball in 2021. Sound good?
Oh, okay. Sure, sounds good.
Marcell Ozuna.
Ooh, I think he stays with the Braves. Braves have a Marcell Ozuna signed tall, and I think they get a deal done, even if they don't have the DH. That's my prediction.
Trevor Bauer.
Ooh, I will say, I'm going to say Yankees. That's where all these guys go, right?
Yeah, the rich get richer. I got you. Do you think we'll see any movement with either Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado at third base?
I don't think with Nolan Arenado we will. I think Chris Bryant will. He's been non-tendered. I don't know what team would have an option to pick him up. Honestly, I think the Braves, you know, I thought the Braves might make a move for Chris Bryant last year. They ended up not doing that. I think that he is an option, though, for the Braves if they do not sign Marcell Ozuna, and then potentially you could use Austin Riley out there in left field. He's kind of a name to keep attention on, pay attention to. I think they've been tracking him for a little bit, so he could be an option there.
Joe Patrick, Braves insider, Atlanta United reporter. He does it all for Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thanks as always, buddy, and I appreciate you getting up a little bit early on a Saturday.
No problem, Nick. Have a good rest of the show, man. Thanks.
You got it. Joe Patrick joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. So that'll be interesting because, like, I've never been a baseball purist. I hate the fact that pitchers used to hit. I want the universal DH. I think it's better for baseball. I want to see guys that can excel at what they're supposed to do. I don't want to watch a guy who's 143 lifetime at the plate. I know baseball purists gets all, well, there's the strategy and the double switch and going to the bullpen. Okay. Give me guys that can break. That's what I want to see. All right, coming up next, the latest NFL mock draft has the Atlanta Falcons at 4, and it has a very interesting selection. Can you really afford to pass on this guy? That's next on the Nick Cale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. .42 here on a Saturday morning. Welcome back in the Cale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Radio.com app, as we take you up until 9 o'clock today. Hawks and the Grizzlies, it's game day in Atlanta. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, of course, will have all of your Hawks coverage later this afternoon, going into the evening. Game 2 of a 72-game sprint Up next, the Memphis Grizzlies, as we run with Ja Morant. Looking forward to that. And get used to it, because you're going to see a lot of these teams with these back-to-back games against the same opponent, reduced travel schedule, obviously because of the pandemic. So always down for a good backcourt matchup. Trae Young, Ja Morant amongst the headliners in this one. We'll get to that game coming up in just about 20 minutes. But let me wrap up hour number two with kind of a NFL draft thought on the Falcons and whether or not that you can really afford to miss on a quarterback at four. So right now, well, let me start by saying this. So Tuesday night, I watched the Boca Raton Bowl. And you know, I'm watching BYU against UCF. And Zach Wilson, going into many people's NFL draft season, is probably the third or fourth quarterback in the draft. Trevor Lawrence, one, Justin Fields, two, and then it's either Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, depending on who you talk to. But after last Tuesday, I mean, Zach Wilson just lit up UCF. The guy threw for 425 yards, like 330 in the first half. He is insanely talented. I've seen him play three or four times this year when BYU's been on national TV, and this kid's the real deal. I'm not saying he's Steve Young circa BYU in the 80s, but he is a legit NFL quarterback. He is going to be a top 10 pick. He's got a great arm, 6'3", 210, and he can move. He's got mobility. But after the way he played on Tuesday, now all the latest mocks, and I'm looking at the one from CBSSports.com, now have him skyrocketing up to the second overall pick. So the first pick is owned by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence goes first, and then the Jets take Zach Wilson at two. See, the Jets really control this NFL draft at the top because they could go Zach Wilson at two, they could go Justin Fields at two, or they could stay put with quarterback and still ride with Sam Darnold and go with another position of need. The third pick is the Bengals. They have Joe Burrow, even though he's injured and out for the year with a broken leg. The Bengals in the mock draft take Penei Sewell, the offensive lineman from Oregon, 6'6", 330. He opted out this year because of COVID, but he's going to be a can't-miss franchise tackle. And there you have the Falcons currently sitting with the fourth overall pick, and this is the first mock that I have read where the Falcons go Justin Fields. And I just don't know, assuming Zach Wilson is off the board. So, I mean, whether you go Zach Wilson or Justin Fields at four, sign me up. But for the sake of this exercise, Justin Fields at four. I don't know how the Atlanta Falcons can possibly afford to not select Justin Fields. Like, how do you pass on a guy who is everything you want in the modern-day NFL quarterback? He's 6'3", 228. He's going to be 235, 240 once he gets on an NFL workout program and an NFL eating diet. So he's going to be basically as thick and as heavy as Cam Newton, but about an inch and a half shorter. 6'3", 228. He'll probably be 6'3", 237 in the NFL. He's got a very good arm. I wouldn't say it's an elite arm, but he's got a very good arm. He's got mobility. He's very accurate. The only knock on him right now in recent weeks against Indiana and Northwestern is that Justin Fields holds on to the ball a little too long. You can coach that out real quick. You can build an offense around him. And if you look around the NFL, I mean, look at what the Eagles just did. The Eagles just gave Carson Wentz a big contract. They are on the hook for a lot of money. And what did they do? They drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. And I said that the moment that pick happened, when Twitter lost their mind, I said they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round for a reason. Not to be a gadget guy, not to be a change of pace guy, not to be a wildcat quarterback, not to throw in an occasional wrinkle where he lines up at receiver and comes in motion. They drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round to be the next franchise quarterback. I think there's a lot of Jalen Hurts in Justin Fields or vice versa. I think they're very similar players. Dual threat quarterbacks, didn't feel like they had the right opportunity in the SEC. One goes to the Big 12, the other goes to the Big 10, and now Jalen Hurts in 2.5, 3 weeks is kind of taking the NFL by storm. Now, I don't know if Jalen Hurts can keep this up. I think Jalen Hurts can be a franchise guy. I don't know that Jalen Hurts is an elite quarterback, But I do feel better saying that Justin Fields is closer to an elite quarterback than Jalen Hurts. So if you're the Falcons and Justin Fields is sitting there with all the issues this team has, all the holes they have to fill, how do you pass on Justin Fields? Look around the league right now. Chiefs, young quarterback. Bills, young quarterback. Browns, young quarterback. Dolphins, young quarterback. Ravens, young quarterback. There's five of your eight in the AFC playoff picture. You go to the NFC, Kyler Murray on the Cardinals. I mean, there's so many young quarterbacks that are coming in right away. And that doesn't even include Justin Herbert, because the Chargers are just coached by a buffoon and Anthony Lynn. But Justin Herbert's going to be the rookie of the year. How did he not start week one? How was Tyrod Taylor starting week one before he got his ribs and his lung punctured? Young quarterbacks now more than ever are ready to go, because the Saturday game has infiltrated the Sunday game. We're seeing a lot of the college elements each and every Sunday. The learning curve is smaller. And I'm not against sitting a guy for a half a season or even a full year if you have a guy like Matt Ryan. But how do you pass on Justin Fields? How do you sell that to your fan base? 404-741-0929. So in the first hour of the show, we had Emory Hunt on, NFL analyst, college football analyst for CBS Sports, and I asked him about the balance of, okay, yeah, we need a franchise quarterback, but we have a bunch of other holes. How do we pass on the quarterback, and how do we evaluate this if we have another player at another position graded higher? Here was Emory Hunt.
If I'm a head coach and I have a running back background, right, and I look at what we need on this team, and I'm thinking, okay, I can coach up the backs. So I can bypass the back. Unless he's a Saquon Barkley, where he's a special talent, then you take him. But if I'm looking at the position or the side of the ball where my expertise lies, if you're a defensive head coach, you think, I can get the most out of my defense, so I can't pass on the opportunity to take the quarterback. If you're an offensive guy, and you're looking at, okay, I can coach the quarterback and I can develop a guy, but I can't pass up on an impact player that can help the quarterback be successful, and that could be Kyle Pitts. Or if I want to just go in and get the best player on my board, and that player just so happens to be Micah Parsons, I'm going to go grab him. Now, would I grab him at the expense of, the lack of development for Michael Walker or Lewakin? I want those guys to continue to grow and develop in their roles. They're doing solid jobs for me. I don't want to throw another guy in there and kind of take one guy away. So there's many different ways you can go about it, but I also believe that it'll ultimately come down to who is the best player on your draft board, regardless of position. So there's no downside to having talent. I know the Bucks right now are showing you that it's tough to manage all that, but for the most part, if you have a talented team, you'll be in a good situation, no matter who's out there on the field. But I would be hard-pressed to bypass the best player that's on my overall draft board, whoever that guy may be.
That was Emory Hunt from CBS Sports on with me earlier this morning. So if we're looking at it with the Falcons, sitting there at four, assuming that's where they end up picking when we finish this regular season in 2 weeks, there are two certainties in the draft ahead of you. The Jaguars or whoever is at one is going to select Trevor Lawrence. Could be the Jags, could be the Jets. And then Penei Sewell at number three, the offensive lineman to the Bengals. But after that, you're going to be sitting there at four, potentially, with the opportunity to go either Zach Wilson or Justin Fields at quarterback, Trey Lance at quarterback, who in the latest CBS mock goes five to the Panthers. So another team in your division with a quarterback. So you'd be looking at Brady, Trey Lance, Drew Brees, Taysom Hill, Matt Ryan. You could get Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State. You could end up going Patrick Surtain, the corner from Alabama, Gregory Rousseau, the edge rusher from Miami, probably the best defensive end in this draft. He was also a COVID opt-out for Miami. And then you have Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. So really the Falcons can't go wrong with any of those guys I said, because they're all elite players at positions of need. This team needs an offensive lineman. They need a pass rusher, a tight end, a corner, a linebacker. And while on the surface, we don't need a quarterback immediately, I do find it very interesting to sit back and say, how can you pass? How can you afford not to select Justin Fields? could be a transformational quarterback, similar to Mike Vick. Maybe not as dynamic, but of that ilk. I don't know how you let that get by you. I really don't. All right, coming up next, hour number three, we'll transition to the hardwood, the Hawks and the Grizzlies. Game two later this afternoon, we'll hear from Lloyd Pierce, John Collins, and also what would be a good start through the first calendar month. Give you my thoughts coming up next. Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.